chapter 7 discuss the importance about hearing about Krishna. Because by hearing about Krishna, one can learn how to see him everywhere as the active essence, as the source of both material energy and spiritual energies, as the controller and source of the three modes of material nature. But then we see, and Arjuna asks the question, why is it that some don't know Krishna, even though he is those things? And the answer was that those three modes of material nature cover the living entities, so that they cover the living entities' knowledge of Krishna, so that they do not, practically cannot, surrender to Krishna. So then, in the third section, I think it's the third section, Krishna explains those who do surrender, or first those who don't surrender, and then he explains those who do surrender. Then after explaining the dearest of those who do surrender, as the jnanis, then Krishna explains those who do surrender in the next section, the fourth section, those who do surrender but not unto Krishna. So there's two of those. Anyone remember who those two who do surrender but to the wrong things? They have the wrong knowledge. One of them? Yes, and they are Ritigyana. They are little intelligence. And then the Abhudaya, no intelligence. The impersonalist. So, after explaining that, the question is asked, what is it that covers the living entity and bewilders him, and what is it that frees him? So the covering is described as Maya's covering of the dualities, that one is born into the material world thinking that something is desirable and something is undesirable, and actually nothing in the material world is either desirable or undesirable. Everything is undesirable and inauspicious. And then, how can one get above that? Through performing devotional service. Now the last two verses, that brings us up to the last two verses in chapter 7. In the next to last verse, Krishna explains, intelligent persons who are endeavoring for liberation from old age and death take refuge in me in devotional service. So they have desires. Just like Chaturvidha Bhajante Mam Jana Sukritino Arjana Artha Gigyasa Artati. Those three, Artha Gigyasa Artati, those who are distressed, those who are curious, and those who want material things, they have desires and they take shelter of Krishna. Those three. Now, a fourth kind of person with a desire takes shelter of Krishna in devotional service. And that person is one who is endeavoring for liberation from birth, old age, disease, and death. They take shelter of Krishna in devotional service. Now, Krishna then explains they're actually Brahman. They are actually Brahman because they entirely know everything about transcendental activities. In this verse, Krishna has mentioned three terms. Brahma, Adhyatma, and Karma. In the next verse, Krishna explains those in full consciousness of me. Those who are in full consciousness of me, who know me, the Supreme Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation of the demigods and all methods of sacrifice, can understand and know me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even at the time of death. So Krishna explains here that if one is Krishna conscious, because this is knowledge of the Absolute, if one knows Krishna as Adi Bhuta, Adi Daiva, and Adi Yajna, then one can know Krishna at the time of death. So those three terms, Adi Bhuta, Adi Daiva, Adi Yajna, and the three terms mentioned in the previous verse, Brahma, Karma, and Adi Atma, were not so clear to Arjuna as to the meaning of them. So therefore, Krishna opens up chapter 8 by saying, O my Lord, O Supreme Person, what is Brahman? What is the self? What a fruit of activities? What is this material manifestation? And what are the demigods? Please explain this to me. So he's asking, what is Brahma? What is Adiatma? What is Karma? What is Adibhuta and Adidaiva? He's asking about five of those five different concepts that Krishna has just explained in the previous two verses in chapter 7. Then in text 2, he asks, who is the Lord of sacrifice? How does he live in the body, O Madhusudan? And how can those engaged in devotional service know you at the time of death? So he asks about Adiyagya. Two questions about Adiyagya. Who is Adiyagya and where does he live? Where does he live within the body? And then the eighth question that Arjuna asks is, how can those engaged in devotional service know you even at the time of death? Now, in the next two verses, Krishna quickly answers seven of the questions. He says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, the indestructible transcendental living entity is called Brahman. And his eternal nature is called Adiatma, the self. Action pertaining to the development of the material bodies of the living entities is called karma, or fruit of activities. Actually, in the purport to this verse, Prabhupada explains something in quite a lot of detail from the Chandogya Upanishad, explaining the meaning of karma. It means specifically, technically, according to the purport, karma means after one performs jaga, and by the potency of his jaga or sacrifice, he goes to the heavenly planets. And then, just before the punya or good karma that is holding him up in the heavenly planets expires, when there's just a little bit left, he comes down in the form of rain. And that rain is absorbed into to make the grains grow. And the grains are eaten and they become semen. And the semen comes a child gradually. And that specifically is karma. That action which develops the material body when the soul when it's just a little bit left, when he descends from the heavenly planets. That specifically is what Krishna explains as karma. So this body is composed of karma.
Can you
read it? That's right in the purport.
No, sir. Just the last moment, is it?
Huh?
Just the last moment?
The last moment?
Is it just when he's going to be exhausted?
Just before the living entity's karma, heavenly karma, is exhausted, the last remaining amounts, he bring him to earth to get a material body. Because if he had no more karma left, then he wouldn't be able to get a material body. The last amounts is his karma. The living entity himself is Brahman, and his nature is devotional nature, as Prabhupada explains it in the purport, is Adiatma. In text 4, O best of the embodied beings, the physical nature which is constantly changing is called Adibhuta, the material manifestation. Possibly, Adibhuta means the presiding deity over the material manifestation more, because that is, it can also be looked at like that, because in that way, that answers Arjuna's, makes clearer Krishna's point. In text 30, of the last chapter, those who are in full consciousness of me, who know me, the Supreme Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation. So it's not exactly just the material manifestation, but it's the Lord of the material manifestation, which is constantly changing. So the material manifestation is constantly changing, and the Lord of that, one who knows that Krishna is the Lord of the material manifestation. And then the universal form, which includes all the demigods, like those of the sun of the moon, sun and the moon, is called Adidaiva. That means that all the demigods and the universal form is consisted of the demigods and their planets. So if one is worshipping the material manifestation, or he's actually worshipping Krishna indirectly. Or if one is worshipping the demigods, he's actually worshipping Krishna indirectly. Or their planets, that's actually part of Krishna's universal body. And finally, and I, the Supreme Lord, represented as the super soul in the hearts of every embodied being, I'm called Adijaga, the Lord of Sacrifice. So if one is performing sacrifices, Krishna is actually the Adijaga, or the Lord of Sacrifice. So going back to text 30, in the seventh chapter, Krishna is explaining again, those in full consciousness of me, who know me, the Supreme Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation. So I, Krishna says, am the governing principle. So, because the point is to know Krishna again. So to know that Krishna is the governing principle or the presider of the material manifestation. It's interesting also that Ramanujacharya comments that this Adibhuta means the Lord of the presider over the bhuts or the ghosts. And then Adidaiva is the demigods. And Adijaga is again of all sacrifices. So if Krishna is the presider of these things, and no matter who is worshipping, and no matter how one is worshipping, one is ultimately worshiping Krishna. And if one remembers Krishna and knows Him as the Lord and Master of all these different things that one is worshipping, then one will remember Krishna at the time of death. And therefore, one can understand and know Him even at the time of death. That's how this all relates to text 30. All these verses relate to text 30, because the point that Krishna is making, he said, if you know these things, you can remember me, know me at the time of death. So therefore Arjuna wanted to know these things, because after all, he's on the battlefield just before the battle, and Krishna is urging him to fight. So it's very worthwhile for him to learn how to know Krishna at the time of death. So he's asking Krishna about these things for the purpose of knowing him at the time of death. And I, again, Krishna says, the Supreme Lord, represented as the super soul in the heart of every embodied being, am called Adijaga, the Lord of Sacrifice. Now, yeah, any questions about this?
No question about that. Adibhuta is like Lord Shiva. He is
but Krishna is but Krishna is the controller of Lord Shiva.
Yes, but my point is that maybe Adi Deva is Lord Brahma, and Adi Yajna is Lord Vishnu. So if someone knows Krishna to be
the source of those, that's an interesting point, because Those are the three modes of material nature. And according to the three modes of material nature, one will worship in one of those three different ways. And therefore, there are three different types of Puranas: Tamasic, Rajasic, and Sattvic Puranas. So Krishna himself is the Lord of all those. Good point.
In text number 3, Krishna defines karma as action pertaining to the doctrine of the material bodies and living entities. So, isn't it also that whatever activities one does for the body is karma, and whatever activities done for Krishna is a karma? Isn't it here and also in that term?
I haven't heard that commentary by anyone yet. But karma specifically means, Krishna is explaining the difference between the soul and the body by this. The soul is spiritual, his nature is devotional service, and his body, or his conditioned nature, is his karma. So, that's the point of that. Those three are together. There's the soul, his spiritual nature, and his material nature, and his material body. So there's a direct separation between those.
So if somebody asks you, what is karma? Very simple thing in Yurika, everybody has a meaning of what is karma.
Yeah.
And where can we show them in the Bhagavad Gita the definition of karma? Because that definition...
Ooh, we look in the fifth chapter, so many places, about karma, about akarma, karma meaning reaction, karma meaning work, karma meaning the actions that award one a material body, karma meaning the actions according to the Vedic scriptures.
So we cannot give them one plain answer?
It depends.
They
mean it to mean reactions, usually, so you can give them that plain answer. For everything you do, there is karma. Or reactions. That's what they want to hear. So you tell them that.
So,
I think we should go on and save your questions, unless it pertains specifically to these four verses.
Just to clarify, so Adi Devata is a universal form, and Adi Bhuta is a demigod. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Adi Devata, yes, is the universal form, and the Adi Devata is the universal form. What was the other one you said?
Because
having these no. That's the material manifestation.
But you were saying these personalities, the presiding deities of this manifestation.
Krishna is the presiding, the controller of the material manifestation, ultimately.
So the material nature is Adibhuta, Adideva is universal form.
I couldn't understand. I couldn't understand what you said.
So Adibhuta is the material nature and Adideva is the universal form of the demigods.
See, but I don't really want to answer one person's question like that right now, because I have to move on. Mm-hmm. And why don't you just save it to the end, and then we can clarify it at the end instead of breaking the flow in the middle. I know that you're saying that. So just at the end, write down your questions, because it breaks the flow of the presentation some. Unless it's something really essential that you won't be able to understand further. If you understand that, don't understand that. Now, then, after describing these seven in the next section, so the first section is Krishna Arjuna asks eight questions, and Krishna answers seven of them very quickly. In the next section, Krishna answers from 5 to 8. He answers the eighth question about how one can remember Krishna even at the time of death. All these questions, again, have to do with the end of the seventh chapter. And whoever at the end of his life quits his body, remembering me alone, at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. So the answer to Arjuna's question, how can one remember you, how can one know you at the time of death? And Krishna's answer is by remembering. Because remembering is devotional service. And one who knows Krishna as Adi Devata, Adi Yajnan, Adi Bhuta can thus remember Krishna at the time of death. Whatever state one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. So here is the general rule. Krishna has just explained that whatever one if one remembers him at the time of death, one goes to him. There's no doubt about that. But here is the general rule. That is true because whatever one remembers at the time of death, he goes to that place. So one... Arjuna may think, oh, this is very good advice. You're telling me to remember you. That was much better advice than when you were telling me to fight. So I should just remember you and not fight. But Krishna says, sorry, Arjuna, in 7, he says, therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna, and at the same time, carry out your prescribed duty of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me, you will attain me without doubt. So sometimes a question is raised amongst the devotees. I've heard it so many times. Is it necessary to remember Krishna while you do your duty, or is it just doing your duty for Krishna is enough? Has anyone heard that question? Raise your hand if you've heard that question. Well, here is Krishna's answer to the question.
What question?
It's also in 1857, by the way. Chaitasya Savakamani Maya Sanyasi Marpada. But here it is. You should always think of me in the form of Krishna, at the same time carry out your prescribed duty of fighting. With your activities dedicated to me. So that's one of the criterion. Dedicate your activities to Krishna. And your mind and intelligence both fixed on me. Then you will attain me without a doubt. So it's mam anusmara yudhyacha. Anusmara means what? Remember, mam, me, and yudhya, fight, also fight. So it is this practice that's going to allow one to remember Krishna at the time of death, because at the time of death it is so difficult. And yes, it's difficult to remember Krishna as we work. But at the time of death, it's a million times more difficult because everything is disjointed. The body, the mind, the intelligence, unlimited pain. So therefore, practice. So he who meditates on me is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His mind constantly engaged in remembering me, undeviated from the path, he, O Partha, is sure to reach me. By this practice of always remembering Krishna, one can even conquer his own nature. This means that according to the modes of material nature, we have different tendencies, and we have different strengths, and we have different weaknesses, and we have different attachments, and we have different frailties. But here is the process of conquering the limitations of our nature, but it takes constant practice and determination. What chapter is that from? That constant practice and determination of Vyaksa and Vairagya? 6, right. Now, so in the first section, Krishna answered Arjuna's questions. And ultimately, they culminated in how to remember Krishna, which is the second section, that one should remember Krishna at the time of death. Now, the third section explains how to remember Krishna. One should meditate on the Supreme Person as one who knows everything, as he who is the oldest, who is the controller, who is smaller than the smallest, who is the maintainer of everything, who is beyond all material conceptions, who is inconceivable, who is always a person. He is luminous like the sun, and he is transcendental beyond this material nature. He has a chintirupam. He has an inconceivable form. Always a person. So here is the process. Krishna is explaining how to remember him. He's explaining the importance of remembering him, and here how to remember him. Now, in the remaining verses in this section, Krishna is going to explain more about remembering him. But now he's going to explain Yoga Misra Bhakti. We've heard previously about Karma Misra Bhakti and Jnana Misra Bhakti, and now Yoga Misra Bhakti. This is what was actually referred to at the end of the seventh chapter about those who want to become liberated from birth and death. That was actually the hint of Yoga Misra Bhakti, because that was a Sakama devotee. To perform devotional service, to become free from birth, death, old age and disease. So here the explanation of that Yoga Misra Bhakti is being given. One who at the time of death fixes his life air between the eyebrows, and by the strength of yoga, with an undeviating mind, engages himself in remembering the Supreme Lord in full devotion, will certainly attain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So ultimately, the point, as we'll hear, is the remembering Krishna, not the fixing the mind. Those are just aids to remembering Krishna, not to fixing the mind on the eyebrows and doing this and that. It's all just to remember Krishna, which is the perfection. Persons who are learned in the Vedas, who are Omkar, and who are great sages in the renounced order, enter into Brahman. Desiring such perfection, one practices celibacy. I shall now briefly explain to you this process by which one may attain salvation. The yogic situation is that of detachment from all sensual engagements, closing all the doors of the senses, and fixing the mind on the heart and the life air on the top of the head. One establishes himself in yoga. After being situated in this yoga practice and vibrating the sacred syllable Om, the supreme combination of letters, if one thinks of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and quits his body, he will certainly reach the spiritual planets. So again, it's that Mam Anusmaram, remembering Krishna. Chant Om and remember Krishna. Because Krishna has said already, Pranava Sava Vedeshu, right? He said that in what chapter?
Seven,
right, very good. That means that I am Om. In the Vedic mantras, I am Om. So Krishna said, that is me, so when you chant Om, remember me. And that way he will certainly reach the Paramangatim, the spiritual planets or the supreme destination. Then, the next section, so that was how to remember Krishna, including Yoga Misra Bhakti, how to remember Krishna even if you're a yogi. Now the next section describes something different from Yoga Misra Bhakti. It describes pure devotional service, 14 through 16. Ananya Chaita Satatam Yomam Smarati Nityasa Tasya Ham Sulabha Parta Nitya Yuktasya Yogina. For one who always remembers me without deviation, I'm easy to obtain, O son of Prita, because of his constant engagement in devotional service. Purport. This verse especially describes the final destination attained by the unalloyed devotees who serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead in Bhakti Yoga. Previous verses have mentioned four different kinds of devotees: the distressed, the inquisitive, those who seek material gain, and the speculative philosophers. Different processes of liberation have also been described: Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Hatha Yoga. The principles of these yoga systems have some bhakti added. They are misra, mixed. Misra means mixed. But this verse particularly mentions pure bhakti yoga without any mixture of jnana, karma, or hatha, or yoga. As indicated by the word ananya chaita, in pure bhakti yoga, the devotee desires nothing but Krishna. A pure devotee does not desire promotion to heavenly planets, nor does he seek oneness with the Brahma Jyoti, or salvation, or liberation from material entanglement. A pure devotee does not desire anything. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the pure devotee is called Nishkam, which means he has no desire for self-interest. Anyone know that verse? Yes.
Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Ateva Shakta Shanta Bhakti Mukti Siddhikami Siddhikami
Sakali Ashanta. Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Ateva Shanta, right? Yeah, he is. Because the devotee has no desires, he's the only one who is peaceful. And it's so amazing that we think in our illusion, in our passion, that if we attain our desires, we will be. So we have to understand this definitely, because we should not cultivate these material desires. We must weed them out, because they are the cause of our misery. We view them as the cause of our pleasure, satisfying our desires, but actually they are the cause of our misery. So we weed them out from beginning to end and become a servant. And desire the pleasure of Krishna, and then Krishna Bhakti Nishkam Ata Eva Shanta. Therefore, the devotee is the only one who's happy. When we say desireless, we mean he desires only to please Krishna. So this is Ananya Bhakti that's described. Ananya Chaita. Ananya means without anything else added. It means without deviation. Just simply, undeviatedly remembering Krishna. Ananda Cheta Satatam. So one undeviatedly, continuously, without breaking, remember Krishna. With no consideration of anything. There's a nice story of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One time he went to pass. And when he came back, he was holding his tongue. And there were devotees there. And they asked him, "Why are you holding your tongue?" And he said, "This tongue is so naughty that I can't get it to stop from chanting Hare Krishna. And I was doing something dirty. And therefore I had to hold my tongue to stop it." And there was one little boy named Gopal there. And Gopal, young boy, said, he said, no, this isn't the correct philosophy. The chanting of the holy names are pure and they should be chanted all the times. For instance, if you were going to die right now, would you think, oh, this is an inauspicious time and it is a dirty time and therefore I shouldn't chant? No. He said, at all times, regardless of the purity of the situation, one should remember Krishna and chant. And Mahaprabhu said to him, "Oh, you have the right philosophy. You are my guru. You are Gopal Guru." So this is how Gopal Guru Goswami, who was a great devotee at in Jagannath Puri. Also, I can't remember, Paramananda, Lord Chaitanya, I think, allowed him to suck his big toe at one time. But he was a great, great acharya. His seat was by the Gambira, and there is where Mahaprabhu spent his last days, his room, in Radhakanta Mat in Jagannath Puri. So, satatam, continuously without question of purity, and also nitya, more. Ananya Cheta Satatam Yomam Smarati Nityasa, continuously, eternally, without deviation. And Tasyaham, for such a person, Sulabha Parta. Labha means obtain, and Sulabha means easy to obtain. So a person who can do this, this is a definition of pure devotional service, I'm easy to obtain. Nitya Yuktasya Yogana means one who is always desiring union with me, to be with me, he is the real yogi. So Krishna is there after hearing about different Misra Bhaktis. Here he describes Ananya Cheta Satatam, pure devotional service. Now, one may then ask, what is the result? What is the result of always remembering Krishna, because we don't come back to this material world? So Krishna answers in 15. After attaining me, said they come to me, the great souls who are yogis in devotion never return to this temporary world which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. And this means that they take birth, but happily. And Krishna explains, as I take birth, one of the commentators explained, just as I take birth with no difficulty as the son of Vasudeva, they will also take their birth. Sam siddhim paramam gata, they obtain the highest spiritual perfection. And what is that highest spiritual perfection? They enter into Krishna's eternal lila. That is paramam gatim. Now, Krishna begins to explain from the highest planet in the material world down to the lowest. All are places of misery where repeated birth and death take place. But one who attains to Maya Bodo, son of Kunti, never takes birth again. So Mamupetya, this term, is repeated in text 15 and 16. And generally in Sanskrit, repetition is not valued. So whenever there is repetition, there's purpose behind it. So Mamapetya means after achieving me, because Krishna's explaining this, because he wants the devotees to understand that they shouldn't become bewildered by the desire to go to the heavenly planets. Therefore, he explains, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka, after achieving me, you won't have to go through this horrible cycle of birth and death again. There is no other situation that will satisfy the soul. So therefore, all devotees hearing this, especially Abrahma Bhuvana Loka, Puna Arvatuna Arjuna, from the highest position in the material world to the lowest position, everything is a place of misery. So therefore, devotees should wipe out from their consciousness any other desire except Mamupetya, achieving Krishna, obtaining Him. Now, that section was about pure devotional service. Now, to fix it in our consciousness, the difference between the material worlds and the spiritual worlds, Krishna explains the next section, comparing the material and spiritual worlds. I've titled it here, 17 through 22. So here is the benefit of leaving the material world. By human calculation, 1,000 ages taken together form the duration of Brahma's one day, and such also is the duration of his night. From the beginning of Brahma's day, all living entities become manifest from the unmanifest state, and thereafter, when the night falls, they emerge into the unmanifest again. Again. And again. When Brahma's day arrives, all living entities come into being, and with the arrival of Brahma's night, they are helplessly annihilated. So this is explained to us to break our attachments to the material world and the temporary things in the material world. Because Brahma, even though on these heavenly planets, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka, from the highest heavenly planet, there is no planet in the material world more glorious than Brahma Loka, but from the highest planet down to the lowest, they're all places of misery. Why? Because of this fact. Created, destroyed, created, destroyed, created, destroyed. And each and every destruction rips from us every one of our material attachments. And birth and death and birth and death. So Krishna is kindly giving us this perspective to awaken us, awaken within us a desire for material renunciation and material detachment, knowing that there is no proper situation in the material world for the eternal soul. Prabhupada explains in the purport, about halfway through, ultimately, when Brahma's life is finished, they are all annihilated, all the planets, and remain unmanifest for millions and millions of years. How would you like to be unmanifest for millions and millions of years? And when Brahma is born again in another millennium, they are again manifest. In this way, we are captivated by the spell of the material world. But those intelligent persons who take the Krishna consciousness use the human life fully in devotional service of the Lord, chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Thus they transfer themselves, even in this life, to the spiritual planet of Krishna and become eternally blissful there, not being subject to such rebirths. So after hearing about this continuous, unavoidable annihilation, creation, Krishna says, yet there is another unmanifest nature which is eternal and is transcendental to the manifest and unmanifested matter. It is supreme. It is never annihilated. When all this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. It is eternally existing. It is transcendental. That which the Vedantists describe as unmanifested and infallible, that which is known as the supreme destination, that place from which, having attained it, one never returns, that is my supreme abode. Paramam mama, my supreme abode. Tad dham, that dham, that place. composed of the internal energy of the Lord. No, nothing to do with the modes of material nature. It's Krishna's eternal abode. And on that, in that wonderful place, pastimes of rasa go on exchange between Krishna's devotees eternally. And that is what we're looking for. So we shouldn't stay in this, in the foamy bubbles of the material world, which are continuously being created and annihilated as the devastations and creations of the material world come and go. No, we should go to that place. And the last verse in this comparison between the material and spiritual world, see how scientifically it's put out? Krishna explains it to awaken with us in a desire to get out of here. Look at the comparison. It's obvious. If we have not died yet in this life, but everyone has knows someone who has died, someone who is dear. And if we don't yet, it will happen soon. Either a friend or a parent or a grandparent or a great-grandparent. Where did they go? We don't know. Do we want that to happen to us? No, no one wants it. So to awaken us, a desire to go to the place where we're eternal, Krishna is so scientifically and sweetly preaching. Go to that place, that eternal avyakta place. It is not unmanifest as formless, but unmanifest materially, composed of Krishna's internal energy. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is the last verse in this section, who is greater than all, is attainable by bhaktya labhyas tvan ananyaya, by unalloyed devotion. Although he is present in his abode, he is all-pervading, and everything is situated within him. What a nice description of Krishna. He is in his abode, separate, but yet he is all-pervading, and everything is within him. This has already been explained in 7, will be explained again in 9 and 10. So that summarizes, that's the conclusion of this section, that we should attain Krishna through pure devotional service and go to the spiritual world. That should be our conclusion. Now the next section, the final section in this short chapter, describes, since we now have heard of that wonderful Paramam Gatim, by remembering Krishna, we had heard that before, we can attain that Paramam Gatim. Now we will hear more about processes of obtaining that spiritual world. Oh, best of the Bharatas. Now this first part of this section, in your sheets, it says the verses for the first part of the section. These are for jnanis, karma yogis, and all sorts of mystic yogis. They have to practice according to these very strict rules. O best of the Bharatas, I shall now explain to you the different times at which, passing from this world, the yogi does or does not come back. Those who know the Supreme Brahman attain that Supreme by passing away from the world during the influence of the fiery god, in the light, at an auspicious moment of the day, during the fortnight of the waxing moon, or during the 6 months when the sun travels in the north. So, for those who know Brahman, this is the fruit, or one who, how one has to leave this world is one is practicing straight Jnana Yoga, not Nishkam Karma, but one who is practicing Jnana Yoga. You have to deal with the presiding deities of smoke and fire and time.
What is the meaning of fiery god?
That means Brahman. Well, let's read what Prabhupada says in the beginning. When fire, light, day, and the fortnight of the moon are mentioned, it is to be understood that over all of them there are various presiding deities who make arrangements for the passage of the soul. At the time of death, the mind carries one on the path to a new life. If one leaves the body at the time designated above, either accidentally or by arrangement, it's possible for him to attain the impersonal Brahmajyoti. No, I'm sorry. Fiery, there are different gods, as Prabhupada is explaining here, demigods. And there is a mechanical, there's like a pathway to Brahman, which is divided into different segments. And when one leaves by this method, the fire god takes him up to a certain place and hands him over to the next demigod, and that he's passed on until he reaches Brahman, from one demigod to the other, until he reaches the Brahmajyoti. So using this very intricate system, yogis can reach the Brahmajyoti. So this is the fruit of Jnana Yoga, but the devotees don't have anything to do with this system. Now here is Karma Yoga. Now just like was explained in that purport to 8.3, there's a whole system of sacrifices by which one goes to heavenly planets. The mystic who passes away from this world during the smoke, the night, the fortnight of the waning mood, or the 6 months when the sun passes in the south, reaches the moon planet, but again comes back. So the karma yogi, the karma kanda people, not the karma yogis as we know karma yogi, as we were talking about karma yoga with Krishna as a result, but the karma kandis, they go to the heavenly planets and they reach the moon planet and they drink soma rasa, as explained by Prabhupada in the purport, but they have to again come back because they're karma kandis. And this is what was explained in that 8.3 about karma. And that when they do come back, the karma is what they make their new material human body from. Now here in 26 is the summary of the two paths. According to Vedic opinion, there are two ways of passing from this world, one in light and one in darkness. When one passes in light, he does not come back. But when one passes in darkness, he returns. So how do these two paths of light and darkness affect the devotees? Although the devotees know these two paths, O Arjuna, they are never bewildered, therefore always be fixed in devotion. Purport. Krishna here is here advising Arjuna that he should not be disturbed by the different paths a soul can take when leaving this material world. A devotee of the Supreme Lord should not worry whether he will depart by arrangement or by accident. The devotee should be firmly established in Krishna consciousness and chant Hare Krishna. He should know that concern over either of these two paths is troublesome. The best way to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness is to be always dovetailed in His service, and that will make one's path to the spiritual kingdom safe, certain, and direct. In the final verse in this chapter, a person, and this verse is a summary of chapters 7 and 8, because we should remember that 8 was just a direct following from those points mentioned at the end of 7. A person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing austere sacrifices, giving charity, or pursuing philosophical or fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all these, and at the end, he reaches the supreme eternal abode. So in this end of the sixth chapter, Krishna has explained that a devotee is superior to a karmi and superior to a jnani. And here, this point is clarified. How a devotee is superior? Because he gains everything and he goes to the spiritual world. He's explained the results of karma or karma kanda, and he's explained the results of Jnana Yoga. So one is Brahman, Jnana Yoga result is Brahman, and Karma Kanda, the result is you come back to the material world. And in 8.14, he's explained that what is the best? Ananyatita Satatam, pure devotional service. Prabhupada explains in the purport. The word Idam Viditva indicates that one should understand the instructions given by Sri Krishna in this chapter and the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita. One should try to understand these chapters not by scholarship or mental speculation, but by hearing them in association with devotees. Chapters 7 through 12 are the essence of Bhagavad Gita. The first six and the last six chapters are like coverings for the middle six chapters, which are especially protected by the Lord. If one is fortunate enough to understand Bhagavad Gita especially these middle six chapters in the association of devotees, then his life at once becomes glorified beyond all penance, sacrifice, charity, speculations. For one can achieve all the results of these activities simply by Krishna consciousness. One who has a little faith in Bhagavad Gita should learn Bhagavad Gita from a devotee. Because in the beginning of the fourth chapter, it is stated clearly that Bhagavad Gita can be understood only by devotees. No one else can perfectly understand the purpose of Bhagavad Gita. One should therefore learn Bhagavad Gita from a devotee of Krishna, not from mental speculators. This is a sign of faith. When one searches for a devotee and finally gets a devotee's association, one actually begins to study and understand Bhagavad Gita. By advancement in the association of the devotees, one is placed in devotional service. And this service dispels all one's misgivings about Krishna or God and Krishna's activities, forms, pastimes, names, and other features. After these misgivings have been perfectly cleared away, one becomes fixed in one's study. Then one relishes the study of Bhagavad Gita and attains the state of feeling, always Krishna conscious. In the advanced stage, one falls completely in love with Krishna. The highest perfectional stage of life enables, this highest perfectional stage of life enables the devotee to be transferred to Krishna's abode in the spiritual sky, Goloka Vrindavan, where the devotee becomes eternally happy. Thus ends chapter 8. Questions? You want that clarified now?
I think I understand.
I tried to make it real clear on the sheet too.
No, I understood on the sheet, but I thought you said something else.
Yeah. Yarava?
What
is the what of it?
Significance?
It's because Krishna's already explained Karma Misra Bhakti, and he's explained Jnana Misra Bhakti, and he's explained when one is a yogi, but his yoga practice is a mixed with bhakti. Misra means fixed.
Mixed,
not fixed. Nishta means fixed. Misra means mixed. So it's yoga mixed with bhakti. So we want to have not anything. We don't want anything mixed with our bhakti. We want just Krishna. That is the definition of pure devotional service given by Rupa Goswami. Anya vilasita sunyam. Nothing mixed. No other desires. Jnana kamar anavrita. No jnana, no karma. Anukulena Krishna anasilanam bhakta uttama. This is pure devotional service. When all the activities are done favorable for cultivating Krishna consciousness, only those activities are done with no mixture of any other desires for jnana or karma, that is called uttama bhakti or pure devotional service. On different levels, it's no matter, maybe in an immature state and maybe in a perfectly mature state, but it's still pure devotional service when it abides by this definition.
You spoke about jnana. On the yoga level, what is more advanced, jnana or nistana?
But
I know for jnana we advance in this time, but the jnana is a stage, no?
This is where the yoga ladder becomes confusing. Understand this, that we've explained the yoga ladder from the point of view of bhakti, really. But if nishkam karma is activity, either karma or bhakti, on the jnana platform. But one can practice jnana yoga and he would be inactive on that platform. The jnana platform is understanding you're not your body. So one who understands he's not his body can still work in nishkam karma. And he's practicing karma yoga or bhakti yoga like that. But a jnana yogi, he is practicing jnana yoga, he will not work because he will be practicing sankhya yoga or jnana yoga, inactive renunciation of work. And that's specifically what Krishna doesn't recommend. Because unless one's heart is completely pure, if he's doing that, he'll get into so much trouble. And then he also says, even if your heart is completely pure, it should still work. Why? To set the right example for others who may not be so advanced.
The last verse of chapter 8, it says that devotional service is better than the
or includes himself inside the Brahma. So just you mentioning that this verse refers to a verse before the end of chapter 6 or 7?
647.
And this is a continuation of 647.
No, it explains it, clarifies it, saying that Krishna in 647 explained that the devotee is superior to the Kami and the Jnani. Here explains why. You get the results of Karma, you get the results of Jnana, but you get much, much better. You get Krishna. See, a person who accepts the path of devotion is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing austerities, charity, Jnana, Karma. Just by performing that, you get what you want too. You get what these things, these miseries, but also you get Krishna's feet eventually. But we don't want these. We don't want these results. We have to make sure we don't want these results. We want.
I have kind of a comment.
Yeah.
I want to say, see if it's correct, my understanding. So I'm seeing that Krishna asked Arjuna asked 8 questions, and Krishna answers them very briefly. And then for 8 questions, he takes so much time or elaborates. It seems to me it is significant to see what Krishna actually wants to say to Arjuna. What is actually the message?
Yeah. See, the other 7 are also used in the service of the 8th, because the 8th has to, his answer to the 8th is how to know Krishna at the time of death is remembering. And the other 7, knowing Brahman, Nadi Deva, Karma, all these things can be used in the service of remembering Krishna. They all have a relationship with Krishna. And things that don't have a relationship with Krishna should not be remembered.
Is it then when to remember or to think of Krishna while working? Things in the relation to Krishna has the same value like the spiritual master.
Huh?
The devotee thinks of the spiritual master. Is it as good as remembering Krishna?
But if one's consciousness is proper when one thinks of his spiritual master, he does remember Krishna. How? Because the spiritual master is Krishna's representative. So if we think of the spiritual master as separate from Krishna, our consciousness is not proper.
Thinking of Krishna is as in his form as the other Sundar.
Yes, but Krishna is never alone. He's always with his devotees. When you think of your spiritual master, you think of how hard he's working and how powerful he is in spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. So you're thinking of Krishna too. Then one shouldn't, this is the point, spiritual master, one should not think that one's spiritual master is separate from Krishna. That is not understanding the spiritual master. Krishna's representative.